Agriculture, Environment, Natural Resources, Finance Committee will come to order. And we have a quorum. And first order of business would be the minutes for April 28th. And Representative Peterson, are the minutes okay?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Looking at the minutes, everybody was here. They look okay.
Representative Peterson moves approval of the minutes. Any additions or corrections? All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion prevails. Minutes are approved. We are going to continue with testimony today regarding the Clean Water Legacy Act. And I believe our first testifiers, because we didn't finish with that list last week, and so we're going to start off with Mr. Keith Carlson from Metropolitan Intercounty Association. Mr. Carlson. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Keith Carlson. I'm the Executive Director of the Metropolitan Intercounty Association that consists of 12 counties here in the state of Minnesota, 7 of those in greater Minnesota, and 5 of those within the Twin Cities metropolitan area. For my comments today, I'll be referring to this document that I understand has been distributed in your packet. Before I start my comments, I guess I'm going to suggest the one thing I want to leave with you is the suggestion that any funding scheme for the Clean Water Legacies Act be as broad-based as possible. That broad base, I would strongly suggest, comes by using the general fund as the basis of funding the intended programs under this legislation. As you'll see as I go through the rest of my presentation, absent that, focusing on one fee gets away from the fact that all entities within Minnesota, individuals, businesses, should really share in the funding of this program and have a stake in this. And as soon as you go towards one narrow fee, you get into issues of who pays, who plays, where it comes from, where does it go, which creates problems that are all, frankly, disappear, in my opinion, if you go to the general fund. A secondary, a less preferable option is certainly to reduce the fees on households for reasons that will become apparent as I go through my presentation. First, I want to state that our organization, which goes by the acronym MICA, does support the objectives of the Clean Water Legacy Act. We support the assessment or identification of impaired waters, the development of plans or TMDLs to address those impairments, and the funding of efforts to clean up our waters. Our concerns, as is obvious, is with how the Act is funded. The Act raises about $80 million in gross revenues, and under the bill has introduced nearly 84% of those monies, or about $68 million, is raised from households. Under an amendment that the chairman has discussed but has not yet been adopted, where it shifts to using the values of improvements as the basis of collecting these revenues, that changes slightly to about 82%, or about $65 million coming from households. Under the bill as introduced, then the remaining 16% or $13 million comes from businesses or industry, and with the proposed amendment that increases slightly to about 18.5% or $15 million. At best, agriculture can be said to be paying about $3.5 million under the original bill as introduced, and with the proposed amendment that actually drops to $2.5 million. The next page here is the current distribution of state taxes in Minnesota from the Department of Revenue's biennial tax incidence study. The columns over on the right-hand side show the current collections from residents, non-residents, and businesses. And I apologize for the... it's not very clear text, but basically, households currently in Minnesota pay about 62% of the tab, a little bit less than two-thirds, and ignoring non-residents, businesses pay about 36%. So you'll see, comparing this to what was proposed under the bill, businesses pay about half of what is proposed under the bill vis-a-vis what they pay in overall state taxes currently. Another concern is that urbanized areas are being asked to pay twice. Once for existing cleanup efforts and again to clean up impairments coming from non-urbanized areas or what's called non-point sources that currently pay little or nothing and will still pay less than 25% under the bill has introduced or 31% in a rough estimation under the bill has proposed to be amended. Our concerns in these areas basically, you know, is that we believe it's unfair. Currently, businesses and households connected to municipal sewers, and this is whether or not they're in the Twin Cities metropolitan area or a city in greater Minnesota or those limited areas and townships that may have sewer service, pay about $61 million or 76% of the tab. Under the proposed change, I think that drops to roughly an estimated $54 million, or still 68% of the proposed tab. These properties already pay for over $400 million a year for their municipal sewer service. In addition, many of those same properties also pay stormwater utility charges, or in lieu or in addition to that, property taxes for stormwater management. According to the MPCA monitoring data, discharges from point sources, these same individuals are responsible for about 14% of the water pollution in the state of Minnesota. So contrast the figure up above where they're being asked to pay from 68 to 76% of the tab, yet they're only responsible for 14% of the problem. That's one of the major concerns that we have with the Act. Our final concern is the Act's absence of any incentive for polluters to clean up their discharges and any penalties for failing to do so. Again, for point discharges, properties that are either hooked up to municipal sewer services or industrial discharges who are directly permitted by the MPCA, they're all subject to fines if they do not meet the requirements of their permits. With the exception of feedlots, non-point dischargers, and those businesses or residences on septic systems who are not as certainly permitted at the state level, just simply aren't regulated anywhere as close to the same extent. While the Act may not want to set up prescriptive incentives or penalties to facilitate the cleanup of state waters in non-urbanized areas, and I certainly understand it's a pretty heavy load to be carried already, our organization believes that some process or structure to come up with such incentives and disincentives in the future should be considered. Mr. Chairman, members, that completes my testimony. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Hey, pretty good at tearing things down. You got any opportunities to build something? What's the solution?
Mr. Chairman, as I said at the beginning of my comments, our preferred outcome, again, is that the general fund be used to provide the funding for this. If the committee feels it can't take the hot handcuffs off, can't go to general fund sources, our second preferred outcome is that some of the alternatives that have been discussed by the committee, such as using a mortgage and deed fee to reduce the fee on households, would be a preferable option to what is apparently on the table at this point.
Chair.
Okay. Representative Junkie.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And your testimony, you keep indicating that the cities are being required to pay 68 to 76% of the tab, yet are only 14% of the problem, that a lot of the problem is coming from non-point sources, yet I didn't hear any real specifics on who is not paying and who these non-point sources are. Can you give me two, three good examples of who's not paying their fair share and who the non-point sources of pollution you're referring to are?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, the two primary sources would be property served by failing or non-conforming septic systems, and the other would be basically any unimproved land where appropriate conservation practices are not being utilized to restrict or confine the runoff from that property.
So, Mr. Chair, is that vernacular for farmland?
Mr. Chairman, farmland certainly falls within that category.
And, Mr. Chair, where do you get your information on that?
Mr. Chairman, again, representative, the 14% figure comes directly from the MPCA. The 76% that comes from non-points is their figure.
Well, again, Mr. Chair, I'd comment that the audience and other testifiers need to be, I think, extremely careful using the MPCA data, because there's a lot of flaws in that, particularly when it comes to agriculture land. They're counting runoff from agriculture land, yet they're also, in those numbers, they're also calculating the natural background that falls on the cities, too. Yet they don't count that in the city runoff. Things that farmers are not responsible for that fall out of the air onto the land. They're talking about, when you actually look at the discharge from the tile lines in ag land, which is water that moves through it and actually discharges into the ditches and rivers that end up in your cities, I believe it was 1 or 1.5% of the problem. So I caution people to be very careful when we're talking about unimproved land, i.e. farmland, as being the big culprit here, because I think unfairly so that MPCA report was very, very slanted in its views of how they treated the cropland versus other land across this state.
Any other questions? Representative Wagenius.
Well, I think Representative Junkie brings up a good point. We all, as a group, do not understand the sources of these small point sources as well as we should, but getting into this kind of bill. I can't speak for the rural areas, but when I've looked at a chart that PCA has given to us and I've shared with members, when they looked at relative, I mean, by and large, I agree with your testimony. I don't like the shift between residential and commercial. It doesn't seem fair to me, but when I look at the relative contribution of urban sources on the chart that the PCA gave us, about a third of that comes from construction sites. That's a huge amount, and it's my understanding that at this point the PCA gives the permit for the $400 and does no checkup at all to see if that pollution or that runoff is being contained. Have you all looked into that at all?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, no, we have not looked at the current permitting process for construction projects.
I think that's something this committee ought to do just as a prevention, so we, again, try to move away from what you're talking about, what I call the mess up cleanup syndrome that we seem to be in.
Okay, other questions, comments? Mr. Carlson, when you, your last sheet you talk about, with the exception of feedlots, non-point dischargers and those businesses and residents on septic systems are not permitted or regulated to a similar extent currently. What type of additional regulations are you, and or penalties are you encouraging?
Mr. Chairman, I'm not suggesting a particular regulatory scheme at this time, but believe that at least the framework for setting up such regulatory schemes should be considered in this legislation. Again, as I point out, it's likely, we obviously aren't going to know until the assessments and the TMDLs are done, that a considerable amount of the effort will have to be expended on non-point sources. If those non-point sources are temporarily taken care of and then the owners or utilizers of those properties revert to those current processes, quite frankly, the dollars that are spent on those, that cleanup will be spent. So we think that it is important that there be some oversight mechanism created, or at least, again, the framework set up to do that, so that the dollars that are proposed to be expended under this act aren't wasted, frankly, for doing a cleanup job, and then the again, owners or users of those properties revert to their past habits, and all the dollars that were spent are effectively lost.
Mr. Chair,
with regard to the fact that this document is actually a document to try and help Minnesota establish policy to come into compliance with someone else's regulations, it's actually the federal regulations. What federal regulations do you believe are lacking in order to gain compliance?
Mr. Chairman, I don't believe, I'm not going to sit here and suggest that I'm an expert in the federal law. Obviously, the intent of the federal law is to establish appropriate TMDLs, total maximum daily loads for, and it basically leaves it to the state and locals to identify the means to meet that. I don't believe that the federal regulations are prescriptive in that regards. It really rests with the state and the locals. And again, you know, basically, the mechanics are being created here for the cleanup. All we're suggesting is that to make sure that those cleanups net long-term benefits for the state of Minnesota, that you need some oversight of whatever is done under those TMDLs to make sure that they stay in place and provide the long-term or permanent benefit that I think is intended by the legislation.
Okay. And I think we most of us share those same concerns and desires. It's just a matter of how we get there. And you have, and incentives will be a way to accomplish that long term. Your last point was that the Act may not set up prescriptive incentives and penalties to facilitate cleanup of the state waters in non-urbanized areas. Our organization believes some process or structure to come up with such incentives and disincentives in the future should be considered. Are you... let's see, I have been involved in with Dakota County in pursuing that specific request of the county. And we found out even as sophisticated as Dakota County was with regard to their data that they have on what's happening on the land and the conservation programs that are in place, and that there was no way to even accomplish what they wanted to accomplish. That, you know, the most sophisticated county in the state with that type of information could not achieve this goal. Do you have some insight as to how it could be achieved?
Mr. Chairman, no, I don't. I think, in fact, you know, this part of my presentation was, in fact, pointed out to me by Dakota County, and I agree there are limitations on the current data available to identify these concerns, but at least some partnering with the local governments, whether it's directly with the counties or cities, or with the water management organizations, whether it's the WMOs, the watershed districts, the soil and water conservation districts, I think may be an appropriate device to try and facilitate that. Again, the concern was the one that I had enunciated previously, that we spend these monies to accomplish the TMDLs, and their effects are non-permanent because people, the users of the properties, go back to non-conforming or inappropriate practices.
In the first part of your presentation, you talked about that the amount that agriculture is paying, and I believe that's based upon the $36 fee per residence.
Mr. Chairman, that's correct.
Did you take into account the cost that would be to agricultural community or industry with regard to establishing conservation and or maintaining conservation and taking land out of production that will have them have almost a permanent lack of revenues from some of those lands to maintain the conservation? Has that been evaluated by you at all?
Mr. Chairman, it has not. We'll concede that's probably appropriate, again, if those are the practices that are required under the TMDLs, that be taken into account.
Okay. I thank you very much for your testimony, Mr. Carlson. My only comment, though, is it's easy to find the problems. It's more difficult to find the answers. If you have some, please bring them forward.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Junkie.
Thank you. Maybe not a question, but I just want to comment to the committee and the audience again as we're considering who pays for the pollution of our waters in this state, in this bill. Remember now, non-point sources are 81% of the problem. And when you go down to the chart, I just want to make sure I had my numbers right. I was pretty close when I talked a little bit ago. Out of that 81%, agricultural tile drainage, which includes the subsurface flows that go down and are drained out, as well as the tile intake flows that come directly off the cropland into the tile intakes. And for those of you who aren't from the country, when you see little flags out in the middle of the field, those are tile intakes. Those are drain sewer, just like you see in the city, and the water goes into them directly from the surface. That contributes 2% of the non-points, so 2 times 81 is roughly 1.6% of the problem is from direct agricultural drainage. Feedlots are less than that, 1.2% of the 81% of non-point. If we're really talking about making a dent, or by the way, septic systems, which was mentioned by the testifier, is 2.8% or 3, it's roughly 2% of the total problem when you multiply it out. The biggest problem, the biggest non-point polluter on this chart is stream bank erosion. Running waters through the streams of this state, eroding the banks and taking natural background phosphorus and bringing it into the system. So, again, be very careful when you attack, I think, the agriculture practices and even feedlots, and we know we have to do something in individual sewer treatment problems too, but all told, they are a small percent of the non-point that we're talking about. And who pays? Well, who owns the stream banks in this state? And you're right, probably should be general fund. I'll concede that because it's a total good. Be very careful when we're picking on, I think, specifically farmable land out there.
Okay. Any comments? Thank you very much, Mr. Carlson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Members, as we're listening to the testimony, keep in mind that when we're dealing with these issues, it's extremely complex, and especially when we start dealing with regard with the watershed. And then sub watersheds. I mean, you start with huge areas, and then you start building it down. And so it's. I'm convinced that there is not a one size fits all solution with regard to how to actually mediate the pollution out there. That it will have to be crafted according to the problems that are being impacting or having their impact within that watershed. That's why I think this particular program has such promise for having long-term positive impacts, because it will pick out those really big problems and have us take limited dollars and really try to address those issues. And very different than what we've done in the past. And so it's, I think it has a lot of potential. Let's see, we have Louis Jamboy, Association of Metropolitan Municipalities. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Louis Jamboy, and I'm with the Association of Metropolitan Municipalities. We're an association that represents 72 cities in the metropolitan area. It includes the central cities, developing suburbs, fully developed suburbs, and some of the rural areas of the Twin Cities metropolitan area in all seven counties. Thank you for the ability to address you this morning. I may get some comments out of Representative Junkie as I proceed here. AMM supports the clean water legacy approach, and like many people to date, we congratulate the chair for his leadership on this issue. We know that the impact of clean water or unclean water will have a great impact on development, and we understand that there's much to gain if we address impaired waters in the state. And in the developing areas of the state, we also understand we have much to lose if we don't address impaired waters. AMM has concerns with the financing of 826, and we've shared those concerns throughout the process with the G16 and others. We are particularly concerned about the fee on utility bills. We believe that fee would layer on top of existing fees for sewer and water. It would be in addition to new storm water utility fees. It's not transparent. It's a state fee on utility bills. And most importantly, we think it would reduce cities' capacity to increase rates for operation and maintenance of their own public facilities. So we're not at all wild about the fee structure as expressed in the early bill and as taken out of this particular bill. We also don't believe that the fees are equitable between ag businesses and residents. Our estimates were that the ag sector contributed about 4%, businesses about 16%, and the residential area about 80% of the money. On the business side, there's no distinction between businesses that really do a good job taking care of their water and wastewater, stormwater, and those that don't. In the original structure, there was also uncertainty about where the money's collected and where it would be spent. On the collection side, the irony is there's suspicion in both the metro area and greater Minnesota that the money would be collected primarily from one area and spent in the other area. And when we're collecting money out of the local tax base, out of city fee structures, that suspicion was really quite high. On the expenditure side, we know that there's a list of phosphorus recipients, but we don't know where the other recipients are going to be. So again, if the money's all collected in one area, where is it going to be spent? Fee structure makes that not very transparent as well. AMM is encouraged by the proposal to move from the utility fee to an improved property value tax assessment. And we're even more encouraged by the deed and mortgage transfer fee program that's been forwarded by the chair and by others, including Representative Hansen. That's our preferred structure, of course. On the improved value property tax base, we've got a couple of comments. First, based on our review, the modification won't compete directly with our utility fees. So putting this charge on a property tax is not going to undermine city's ability to increase fees for sewer, water, and storm sewer projects within their jurisdiction. Secondly, through the work of House staff, it was made pretty apparent that the money collected in the metro areas is pretty equivalent to the money collected in greater Minnesota. It's transparent, and we think if money's being taken out of cities again, that transparency is very important. It establishes a uniform collection system. It's on property tax statements as opposed to fee statements, which means there won't be one collection system for cities and a second collection system for counties. And finally, it provides a break for low-value and perhaps low-income people, residences, and businesses, and we think that's a nice feature. So the improved property value-based tax assessment going on property tax rolls is, I think, an improvement in a variety of ways. But it doesn't address other issues. It still doesn't address what we think is the inequity between ag business and residents. It still relies very, very heavily on the residences, and in fact, it carefully preserves the 4%, 16%, and 80% totals in that area. And we think it can't address some of the other issues that Keith Carlson talked about. Our bottom line, our recommendations, Mr. Chair, you're asking for recommendations, is that we would encourage you to dump the fee structure that is currently not in your bill right now. We'd recommend that you continue to leave that out of the bill. We would like you to go with the mortgage and deed registration fees. We think that's a great option for financing this proposal. We believe that there's greater capacity for increased bonding for public infrastructure uses, wastewater treatment and stormwater projects, including geo bonding for grant activity and a much greater opportunity for revenue bonding through the Public Facilities Authority. If we stick with improved land value-based property tax assessments, we'd recommend that you treat farms like businesses and set up the farms as a business with a business rate as opposed to a residential rate. And we think that some exploration could be done to create a two-tiered business structure, one tier for businesses, and there are many out there who do an excellent job of managing their wastewater treatment and stormwater runoff, and another tier for businesses that simply draw water out of a city system, deposit wastewater back into a city collection system, and don't manage their runoff. We think the additional funds raised by the mortgage and deed registration, the treating farms as businesses, and better use of bonding should be used to reduce the rate at the local level for residences. And finally, Mr. Chair, I'm going to try to make a crosswalk. I don't know if this is going to work or not, but HF 826 will likely recommend using the local tax base or fee system to raise money for state agencies and state programs. Currently in the tax committee, there are proposals to limit cities' ability to use their own tax base or fee system to raise money for their own needs. We would hope that a vote for using the local tax base or fee system to raise money for this program would result in you providing a corresponding negative vote against limiting cities' use of their own tax base for city needs. And with that, Mr. Chair, I think I've done enough damage. Thank you.
That was a good move. Representative Pettis.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Janboy, do you have any, what would you do then, two questions. Number one, with organic farms that I would say must be polluting less. And then what would you do to assess the vast amount of non-private land in the state, which is definitely polluting, especially with phosphorus and other chemicals, other natural chemicals?
Mr. Chair, Representative Pennis, I would treat ag property farms as businesses on the low end of the business fee scale. In other words, $120 as opposed to the $36 now. So I would give the ag sector the benefit of the doubt in terms of their land stewardship. I have to admit I have not considered charges against non-private or public facilities. I had not considered that.
Other questions? Representative
Thank Junkie. You, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Mr. Janboy, and I won't even pick on you for the farm stuff. You're so misguided, I don't even know where to start. So, but I will ask you a sincere question. You talked about the mortgage deed tax, which I tend to agree with you on. In your opinion, though, should it be as currently set up where it's a progressive tax based on property value when you register a deed? I believe it's $3.30 per thousand. Or should it be a flat fee on all properties? What would be the best structure for that? You know, a certain amount per thousand of deed registration, or a flat fee based on your type of property?
Mr. Chair Representative Junkie, I had considered just a flat fee. I think there's opportunity to work both options through, see what kind of money it would raise. But when we were working back in the office, we were thinking of a flat fee.
And again, Mr. Chair, I'd ask the committee to consider that too. And again, farms sell for a lot more than rural residential. Businesses sell for a lot more than urban residential. Properties that take up a lot of land and typically then have more runoff problems tend to be bigger and more costly. And you would think that would correspond in the what we're hearing here to the amount of pollution. So, you know, a deed tax per thousand may be a more fair solution than the flat fee, in my mind at this point.
No argument out of me, Representative Junkie.
Other questions? Thank you very much for your testimony.
Thank you.
Mark Giga. Is Mark here? Okay, we'll pass over that for now. Carrie Thurlow. Welcome to committee. Please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Carrie Thurlow. I represent the Coalition of Greater Minnesota Cities, which is an organization of 72 cities located outside the metropolitan area. My comments will be brief. I will note for the record that perhaps in an unusual move, we agree with largely with the comments made by Louis Jamboy of the AMM. It's odd that CGMC and AMM agree on many of these issues. We also agree with much of what Keith Carlson and Mike have said about the distribution of the responsibility of paying for the fee, and some of the we echo some of the concerns also with the fee structure itself. We are encouraged by some of the proposals that have come forward, including the proposal for putting a fee on improvements, as well as looking at putting a fee on mortgage and deed transfers. And since those issues have largely been discussed, I'd be happy to take questions at the end of my testimony, but won't cover those issues in detail. I would also state that we agree with Mr. Jamboy to the extent that he's pointed out that bonding is an appropriate source for funding some of the infrastructure improvements that will be made necessary by TMDLs. That has been a traditional source of funding, and we agree that that is an appropriate funding source for some of the problem. CGMC does support the objectives of the Clean Water Legacy Act. However, our concerns have largely been focused on the policies with the Act. We remain concerned about third-party TMDLs and have a proposal that we hope is a compromise that will fix that later today. And I'd be happy to answer questions. The primary focus of my testimony, however, I'd like to talk about where we spend the money. And currently, there is a program in the Clean Water Legacy Act for TMDL grants to cover stormwater and wastewater infrastructure projects that will be made necessary by TMDLs. It is currently unfunded in the program. It was in the bill. It's the only program unfunded in the allocation portion of the bill. But at the same time, it is the only portion of the bill, allocation portion of the bill, that is directly tied to compliance measures associated with TMDLs. There are a lot of good programs funded in the bill. Please be clear that I'm not testifying against the other funding the other programs that are funded in the bill. However, this bill is largely made necessary by federal regulations and largely made necessary because of total maximum daily loads. Our cities are greatly concerned that not only will our economic development projects be stalled if we do not create the TMDLs, but that our economic development programs will be stalled if we cannot meet these TMDLs. And so we feel that it is vitally important to put significant dollars towards TMDL compliance, and that would be to funding the TMDL grant program that is currently unfunded in the bill. With that, Mr. Chair, in the interest of time, I'd be happy to answer any questions you may have. We're very encouraged and we support the efforts that you have made to come up with other alternative funding sources, and we'd be happy to work with and continue to work with the G16 group and other stakeholders as this bill moves forward.
Okay. Questions? Representative Magnus.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ms. Thurlow, excuse me. Do you support the statements from Mr. Carlson and Mr. Schmuck, Jamboy, that he told me his name was Schmuck earlier this morning. We're doing saying agriculture isn't paying their fair share. Does the coalition support that?
Mr. Chair, Representative Magnus, we would probably phrase it a little bit differently. We are concerned with the allocations put forward in the bill, that there is such a huge burden placed on homeowners, especially in light of the fact that the current allocations would require that most of the infrastructure needs be funded with loans, which would require additional increases for homeowners to actually pay back those loans. So we are concerned with the distribution of the responsibility, whether there have been a lot of issues that have come to light, taking into consideration some of the issues that have not maybe factored into the bottom dollar paying for fees. And so, but we would support perhaps some of the ideas that have floated out there, especially perhaps Representative Junkie's idea of putting a mortgage fee based on, I believe it was 1,000 or whatever, based on land mass, that perhaps would make it more equitable.
Okay, other questions?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a comment, where I live, a pig is called a pig no matter how you dress it.
How about this spin around?
Mr. Chair,
just to
remind the Coalition of Greater Minnesota Cities, and I think they know this, but I think it's important to remind them that in western Minnesota, where I'm from, and represent Pennis and Magnus and others, agriculture still accounts for roughly 40% of the economy out there. So the homes and the businesses and all the folks that are out there because of agriculture. 40% of the activity is because of that agriculture. So we need to be very careful how we address that.
And Mr. Chair, if I may, Representative Junkie, I want to be clear that we are not necessarily suggesting that we penalize agriculture. We're interested in looking at some of the ways to lessen the burden on homeowners and perhaps bring up the percentages so they perhaps are a little bit more equitable.
And other questions? Ms. Thurlow, with regard to your attack on the third-party TMDLs, would you give us a little more information on why you think that they're such a danger?
Certainly, Mr. Chair. We are very concerned. Mr. Chair, there's provisions in the bill, and I first want to thank you for being willing to work with us throughout this process on the third-party TMDL issue. The Coalition of Greater Minnesota Cities is very concerned with provisions in the bill that first point out that the responsibility for creating TMDLs as directed by federal law is with MPCA. Then there is language in the bill that would allow third-party TMDL or third parties that are not defined in the bill to create in whole or in part, in whole or in part TMDLs. These are the regulations that will primarily affect the cities that that I represent in cities throughout the state. As you may or may not know, some of these third parties are also the very groups that are suing our cities and preventing economic development activities. And we're very concerned of the potential conflict of interest as well as the potential problems that could exist by allowing these groups to develop in whole the regulations that will apply to our cities. Now, we are not concerned. We certainly grant that the MPCA should be able to use consultants and consult stakeholders in developing TMDLs. We believe strongly that local input is important in creating the TMDLs and the plans for cleaning up our water. And so the compromise that we think is appropriate is to just clarify the language. We think it's really an issue of clarification that really points out what MPCA does now. They retain overall responsibility of the TMDLs, but can parcel out portions of the TMDL for experts to give scientific advice, to allow for stakeholders, or to allow groups to do portions of the TMDL, but that we spell out in law that MPCA would retain overall control and responsibility so we know if there are issues with the TMDL, we know where the overall responsibility lies.
And Ms. Thurlow, with the we're not able to use soil and water conservation districts and watershed districts and counties and others to help us in this effort, can you tell me what the cost would be to the state of what type of bureaucracy and will we have to expand into in order to be able to take care of this task?
Mr. Chair, let me be clear. We're not saying that soil, water conservation districts, watersheds, and the other groups that you've identified should not participate in the process. We think after reviewing some of the third-party contracts that MPCA has currently with some of the third parties that they work with, we think that the compromise that we've offered really allows the MPCA to do what it already does, allows the third parties to submit work plans, TMDLs, that PCA reviews the overall work plan, budget, timeline for developing TMDLs, but that they retain overall responsibility. So in our minds, it really is just clarifying the terminology used in the bill and clarifying what MPCA already does, but does not expand the role of third parties as we move forward.
Okay, Representative Wagenius.
Okay. Help me out here. You mentioned conflict of interest, and without going back and quickly going through the bill, I thought we wrote in the bill that you couldn't have conflicts of interest. Mr. Chairman, does that language still remain?
Pardon? Is that a question to me?
One of the things I thought was in the bill, I mean, the testifier mentioned conflicts of interest. And at early on, I thought with regard to the TMDL language, that there could not be conflicts of interest. Is that still in your bill?
Representative, yes, it is.
So if that very direct language is in the bill, I'm having trouble with your testimony where you said there were conflicts of interest and some folks who had conflicts were doing the TMDL. Help us out with an example here.
Mr. Chair, Representative Wagenius, I think there are two concerns here. First, the conflict of language in the bill, we appreciate the attempt to better clarify that. The conflict of interest is not defined in the bill, so our concern is that would lead to at least some potential lawsuits as to defining what a conflict of interest is, where a conflict of line. Our other concern, however, goes beyond just our concerns of conflict of interest. We're talking about regulations that will impact our local units of government. They're regulations required by the federal government and required that the MPCA retain overall control of. And we think that if we're talking about government regulations that are enforcing state water quality standards, that those really should rest in the control of the MPCA. That, again, we are not saying that MPCA should not involve environmental groups, local units of government, other interested stakeholders in creating TMDLs. But we want very clearly in the law as we move forward, our concern is that the current language in the bill expands the ability of third parties to take control over these government regulations. And we want very clearly in the bill statements that keep the overall responsibility with the state agency.
Ms. Thurlow, as you're aware, the federal government is the regulation that we're trying to comply with. And the federal government mandates that the MPCA has to be in absolute control. What is it you're questioning? What are you questioning? Why do you believe the MPCA would not be in control when that's the only thing that we can do? We can't designate anybody else to be in control. It's out of our power.
Mr. Chair, the language in the bill, currently in the bill, would allow a third party to develop in whole or in part a TMDL. Now, I will grant to you that it still requires the MPC to review and approve TMDLs before they send it to the federal government for final approval. The concern, however, is that that would be the only aspect of control the MPCA would retain, is the overall review and approval before sending it to the federal government. Now, I understand that the MPCA, like all other federal agencies, is short budgeted right now. They're short staffed. We understand that that is one of the reasons why they want to use third-party TMDLs. But because of those budgetary concerns, we are also concerned that overall approval turns into a simple rubber stamp, that the MPCA simply would not be able to exercise the level of control necessary when looking at these TMDLs. Please be clear that we are concerned here that TMDLs will impact our economic development and that we are very interested in making sure that TMDLs get done and that they are achievable, and that we are concerned that some third parties may make that more difficult for us.
Can you tell me exactly where you believe we are giving additional authority to a third-party TMDL to make a decision that would not be under the control of the MPCA or have to have the approval of the MPCA?
Mr. Chair, I concede that the MPCA has to approve TMDLs before they are sent to the EPA. Our concern is the level of control that will be exercised before that approval process. In looking at, give me a moment here and I'll get the reference. Our concern here is, first of all, on page 2, the section is line 26 through 32. A third-party TMDL means a TMDL by the Pollution Control Agency that is developed in whole or in part cooperatively between representatives of local units of government where the TMDL is being completed and a qualified public or private nonprofit entity that that works with the MPCA. And a grant, I will grant to you that it requires that it is consistent with the goals, policies, and priorities further identified in this language. Our concern is that it could potentially, and while the MPCA can come up here and say it's not their intent, but this is major legislation moving forward, that the potential is there that a private nonprofit entity can develop in whole a TMDL regulation. Those are the regulations that will be put on our cities, the government regulations enforcing our state water quality standards. While the federal government is requiring these TMDLs, they are based on enforcement of our state water quality standards, and we believe that that responsibility, that this language potentially would allow private nonprofit entities to develop those regulations in whole. Now, again, we are not concerned with allowing MPCA to use these folks in consultation. We understand that private nonprofits have expertise, levels of expertise. Our concern is clarifying the language so that it is not, that the potential is not there to turn over the development in whole. And part of our concern is the language of using develop both by the PCA developing TMDL, the overall responsibility list, to develop TMDLs is with the PCA, and yet could allow a private nonprofit entity to develop in whole.
Representative McGinnis.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. After just listening to your testimony, I think the problem that you're addressing or that you want us to address is not really with the language. The real problem is you're seeing that MPCA may not have enough staff to really go over and look at what is being done locally. So it's really a question of, are we going to fund enough staff at PCA? And that's what a lot of this bill is about, funding staff at PCA. But are we going to fund enough staff at PCA to really review or even, there's another word there, participate as it goes along, monitor the progress of the TMDL, and perhaps that is a phrase you could consider, Mr. Chairman, that PCA should as the process goes along, monitor the progress of the TMDL. But I really think it's not so much a language problem as a staffing problem at this point.
Okay. Other questions? Representative Hocking.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And to the testifier, on page 2 of the subdivision 9 that you just read, on line 28, when you look at the words cooperatively between representatives from local units of government, I mean, if we're worried about, you know, some black helicopter private organization co-opting everything that you work for, it says right in the language of the bill, cooperatively between representatives of local units of government. I would think that that language there is pretty clear and would give you, all the room and cover all the things that you're worried about.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hoppe, I would sincerely hope that that is the case. However, some of the organizations that could potentially develop these TMDLs are also some of the organizations that are suing the cities that I represent. Our concern is that we may be asked to have regulations cooperatively, of course, except work on regulations. Our only alternative would be to be sued by those same organizations.
Mr. Chair, follow-up. Can you give us the name? I mean, are these soil and water conservation districts? Are these, watershed districts? What are we looking at?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hoppe, I certainly don't want to call out any particular environmental group as being some of the bad guys here. Some of the organizations that we've been sued in the past, I can give you that example. I don't know. I want to be clear here that I don't want to say that a particular organization would do some of the things that we're concerned about. But some of the organizations that our cities have been sued by are the Minnesota Center for Environmental Advocacy, for example, other nonprofit environmental groups.
Okay. Other questions? On page, going to the, because it's the document we have before us, I have a delete everything amendment that's sitting in front of us right now, 0565. Members, just for your reference, if you could go to page 9, and Ms. Thurwell, do you have a copy of that?
Yes, I do, Mr. Chair.
It says, On line 19, it says a TMDL developed by a third party is subject to modification and approval by the Pollution Control Agency and must be approved by the Pollution Control Agency before it's submitted to the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency. That's not adequate for you.
You could monitor the progress.
Pardon? Representative Wiggins.
No, I just, in that place, you could, in this place, you could add the language monitor the progress as PCA is going through, because that is what I hear part of the, without redoing what you're doing. I think you are considering, you are including monitoring the process, and perhaps adding those words would be helpful.
Okay. It's a good suggestion. If you go up on, also on page 9, go up to line 12. Because the concern earlier was that these nonprofit organizations would not have enough local contact, we said that at least 60, actually starts on line 9, an agreement with a private nonprofit entity must require appointment of an advisory committee to provide oversight of the development of the TMDL. At least 60% of the members of the advisory committee must be representatives of local public agencies from the area affected by the TMDL. And those were all efforts or language that was put in to try and make sure that there was local input, and even though it would be a non-profit organization, that they still would have to be listening to the local people, because that's still the overall objective of this document, is to not only coordinate at the state level, but also provide public policy that says that the decision-making processes on how things are going to be dealt with need to occur down at the local level. But we certainly don't want to have them going off on a tangent on their own, which is kind of what I sense that you believe that they may do. And so we don't want that. So we're looking for additional language. So I appreciate Representative Wiggins, which we have there, and maybe we can find some other comfort zone. Rather than completely eliminate, I thought that there's also a document in your that's been handed out. It's the A-29 amendment. Which I believe is the amendment that Thurwald has proposed, and I've been there's one with quite a bit of writing on it. That way, it's been adjusted then to the delete everything amendment, so if you can track it. And the language that they had written there, I didn't have any problem with because I thought it was clarifying language. But then I see that they were deleting the definitions and all the rest of it, and I go, wait a minute here. That's, you know, got the activities and then put in, you know, clarifying language that's weaker than what we actually have. So I, I'm concerned that this amendment, the things were not written on the paper are have significant impact. Also, Mr. Thurwald, on line 7 of that amendment, it says it may consult. Is that different than they contract?
Mr. Chair, we would certainly support adding in consult and contract. I believe we put in the word consult because we understood as moving through the process and discussing third-party team deals that consultation, especially with scientific modeling and such that is necessary for team deals, is an important aspect the MPCA uses third parties for it. And so we would certainly, I think we would want to retain the word consult, but also if the chair sees fit to add and contract, we would certainly have no problem with that.
And could you clarify for me, what were the reasons that you want to delete the definitions and the entire section of third-party TMDL development?
Mr. Chair, we feel by deleting the definition and the section and replacing it with the language that you have before you, that really that clarifies. Our concern is the definition and the language allows, again, the keywords are development of a TMDL by a third party in whole. That could potentially, because we're talking about that the MPCA also has overall responsibility in using the same word to develop TMDLs, that the potential there is to turn over what should be a government function. And so we think the language clarifies, but by removing the potential for a third party to develop in whole and replacing it with this language that allows the MPCA to do what we believe it already does, which we understood was the intent of the language to begin with in the original bill, we feel clarifies everything and provides us much greater comfort.
Okay. By deleting that language, the third-party TMDL development on page 9, you also eliminate the conflict of interest piece, which is actually starts up on line 14. Doesn't determine whether an entity is qualified to develop a TMDL. The agency must consider the technical and administrative qualifications of the entity and may not enter into an agreement with a third-party entity that has a conflict of interest with respect to the development of the third-party TMDL. Why do you want to delete that?
Mr. Chair, we would certainly be fine putting it back in. We deleted it because our understanding is that MPCA in contracting with third parties right now is already governed by some conflict of language provisions in statute when contracting with third parties. We'd certainly be willing to put it back in. We also recognize the fact that in consulting with third parties, especially as stakeholders, you probably will have conflicts of interest. As our local units of government participate in developing the TMDLs that will apply to them, they probably will have a conflict of interest, but they also have a particular perspective that should be considered. And in consulting with those third parties as part of a stakeholder group, we don't want to eliminate that possibility. We also recognize that environmental groups probably have a conflict of interest in some cases, but probably should be included as a stakeholder. And so we don't want to eliminate that possibility of having their consultation as part of a stakeholder group.
Okay. I have one other question, and I'll let you go. On page 2, when we're looking at the definition between lines 26 and 32, If on line 27 at the end of the line is where it actually says the words in whole or in part with regard to what the MPCA can do with a third party. And I'm wondering if it read the third party TMDL means a TMDL pollution control agency that is developed cooperatively between representatives from local units of government. If that doesn't accomplish the same thing that your amendment does when you state on line 1 of your amendment, or page 1 of your amendment, line 11, that the pollution control agency may not delegate the whole development of a TMDL to a third party.
Mr. Chair, if I understand your question correctly, you're asking me if the coalition would be fine with deleting in whole or in part on lines 27 and 28 on page 2 as a replacement for our prohibition for delegating a whole development of a TMDL. Is that the question you're asking me?
I'm looking at the amendment that you have forward, and the really only substantive thing that takes place as far as addition to the document, other than deleting definitions and that sort of thing, but as far as actually making a change in the document, is those words that says it may not delegate the whole development of a TMDL to a third party. And I think that could be accomplished right in the definition, just eliminating that portion out of there in whole or in part. But why don't you think about that?
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Hoppe.
Just for clarification, the A29, is that an amendment that the coalition is putting forward for us to consider?
They have on the table. I it may be offered by someone at whenever we start to get the amendments.
Okay.
We look at it, but I know that it came from them.
Can
originally,
we
they talked to me about it specifically, and so I was trying to get some clarification on
okay.
the record.
So can we speak strongly against it then?
Yes.
Okay. Just checking.
Let's see if we go back at Mr. Erdell Erickson. Mr. Del Erickson? Okay, not here. Here he is. Sorry. I'm sorry. Didn't see you. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to present this testimony. My comments will address some of the ethics and accountability implications and some of the core economic and environmental consequences of the funding proposals and suggest solutions. One thing about coming at the end of these proceedings is that most of what I would say has already gone into people, but other witnesses have gone into some detail, so I'll be very brief in my comments. The funding mechanism needs a more ethical and environmentally wise approach. Fundamentally, the bill proposes to provide funding from those who have already borne the burden of paying for watershed and pollution remedies. These consumers would primarily be residential and business owners and utility company consumers in metropolitan areas. And in rural areas, it would be homeowners and farmers who have already installed drain fields or septic systems. Under this legislation, they are required to pay for remediation or prevention systems in other regions. It follows from the funding mechanism, from the proposed funding mechanism, that the economic and environmental consequences of the legislation are counterproductive to wetlands protection and healthy watershed systems. The reasons should be clear. The funding mechanism is a subsidy. Subsidies are used to shift accountability and to accommodate and more frequently encourage developments. Fundamentally, subsidy serves to accommodate the status quo. The implication is that communities or enterprises that now disadvantage wetlands and watersheds will thrive. In a circular fashion, unless funding is changed, it means our wetlands and watersheds will be increasingly under stress, and preservation, protection, and remediation made increasingly difficult and over time impossible. The result is that as watersheds deteriorate, the costs will rise, with the increased costs continually shifted to those who have already assumed financial and ethical responsibility for wetlands and watershed protection. Let's briefly connect ecology, development, funding accountability, and this proposed legislation. As Chairman Osmond stated in his introductory remarks the other day, the gist of the bill is a compilation of existing laws and regulations. These have been in effect for many years, if not decades. Most, perhaps all, metropolitan areas have made a good faith effort to comply, and their water systems reflect those efforts. As metropolitan areas are fully aware, population growth is expensive and jeopardizes the environment. Yet many communities, while actively promoting growth, have not adhered to the same wetland and watershed regulations their big brother metropolitan areas have for many years. Only now, when environmental thresholds are in process of being exceeded and specific timelines set by authorities, is increased action evident. Reining in unwise community water and watershed development is a primary reason for this legislation. However, under the proposed funding method, the accountability issue remains the core issue. Section 9, Subdivision 3 of the bill is an example of misdirected accountability. This part involves the use of the proposed legacy funding account. It appears to be a carte blanche invitation to misuse of legacy funds. Parts 2, 3, and 4 provide funds to communities for performing activities they are already responsible for undertaking. Part 2, prevention, is particularly interesting in that it suggests to me that virtually any activity a community can be involved in will be able to use this part to shed its funding responsibility. to use it as a reason for funding from the legacy account rather than its own local sources and procedures. I recommend that Section 9, Subdivision 3, Parts 2, 3, and 4 be stricken from the bill. My final thoughts and funding recommendations. I'll be to the point. If the accountability issues cannot be corrected, the bill be so grievously flawed that it must not pass. However, that leaves the most critical element of the bill in doubt. Only 10 to 15% of the state's waters have been examined. Indicating how serious the state's water problems are, 40% were found to be impaired. Many wetlands are no longer impaired. They no longer exist. It is essential that all waters be evaluated. Not over 10 years, but in the next 2 years. Because it is statewide, properly the funding should be from general revenues. Even if this bill passes in its present form, in some mistaken process, the water examination part of the bill must be carved out of it and placed into the current budget of the MPCA and the DNR. Because most of the objectives of this legislation already exist in state PCA and DNR laws and regulations, the objectives can be met by enforcing existing regulations with funding from general revenues. Because of existing infrastructures and substantially fewer subsidies, the cost to the state would be substantially less. $80 million is not a fee. $40 million landowner cost is not a fee. $25 million in debt is not a fee. These are taxes, and no other descriptions will change its character. Raising taxes is already in the proposal. Raising general revenues is the best approach. It would also eliminate concerns of how the poor would be affected and increase the progressiveness of revenue collection, but not increase or implement additional fees. Regarding debt, in large measure, the use of debt shifts the accountability and cost from current users to the future. The proposed fees cloud the issue of accountability. Accountability and responsibility need to go hand in hand with funding. Accountability means that communities have the obligation to address their water issues. Communities already have in place the processes necessary to resolve local water and watershed issues. Thank you for this opportunity.
Okay, any questions? Okay, thank you very much for your testimony. Mark Giga. All right, members, I'm going to hand out a document that was sent to us that Mr. Giga was, if we had questions, was going to be here to discuss. I wanted to pass it out when he was here. Evidently, he's not able to attend. Go ahead, please. Why don't you give me a copy? This is a, we have received a letter from the Taxpayers League of Minnesota yesterday. And this is to the committee members. So I'll wait for just a second for it to be passed out. This letter is sent to us by David Strom, president of the Taxpayers League of Minnesota. It says, "Dear committee members, the Taxpayers League of Minnesota does not oppose the current version of Clean Water Legacy Act, assuming that the sunset provision contained in Minnesota Statute 115.06, Subdivision 4, Paragraph D, which states this division shall sunset June 30, 2005, is removed from Statna's sunset provision, adequately address the concern that citizen monitors would be given authority to enter onto private property without the consent of landowner. We have been very concerned about the potential threats of property rights that some interpretations of the bill have pointed out, and believe that this change will greatly improve the bill. The chairman has worked diligently to improve the bill, and we are currently satisfied this change will address most of the concerns raised. Overall, we believe that the Clean Water Legacy Act has been crafted in such a way as to satisfy the need to implement the Clean Water Act without unduly burdening property owners or future economic growth." David Strom, Minnesota Taxpayers League. I wanted to have that in the record because we have legislators that have been passing out, sending out information that is saying that this document that we've been working on is somehow impeding with regard to property rights, and it's also imposing additional regulations by the state of Minnesota on Minnesota's water use and a lot of other claims, and yet people have not been able to give me a page in line that they are objecting to. And so I really appreciate the Taxpayers League taking a look at this issue, and especially with regard to the property rights issue, and giving us their opinion. As you know, they're a fairly conservative organization, and one that is also opposed to additional taxes, but believes that this particular bill is something that should be going forward. Minnesota needs it, not only for its environment, but for its economic future. And I wanted to have that on the record. Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, for your explanation around why you read the letter. But we spend a lot of time in this room, and there are a lot of groups who come here every single day that are sitting in the sit in the gallery and in the chairs. They're here all the time. I'm wondering, why can't the Taxpayers League just show up and testify? I mean, that's kind of a slam to everybody who comes every day. I mean, where's Mr. Strom? It's just a comment. They could show up and do this themselves.
Representative Peterson, in fairness, I believe that they were here at past meetings, and I asked them to give it to us in writing, so if we were not able to make this particular one, that we'd be able to get it on the record. So they have been attending our meetings. Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a comment. I think most of those that are sitting here get paid well.
Yeah. Follow up.
Except legislators.
Yeah, exactly.
What about us?
Right. But that's fine. But, you know, they could show up and testify. I know they've been here, but people have been here much longer than them. And I don't understand why, you know, we're supposed to stop in our tracks because there's Taxpayer League letterhead on the table. Isn't this part of the group that got us in some of the tough trouble anyway? Because the governor's hamstrung by this pledge, and then we're going to send out all this money from this Clean Water Legacy Act potentially to agencies that have been cut because we've got some budget constraints brought on by this letterhead. Okay. I mean, let's be consistent and name names here. We spent 20 minutes on who's the bad TMDL actor, too. We finally got a name. We got 3 weeks left.
I appreciate your comments, Representative Peterson. I take particular pride in having this particular letter here because I had a really big challenge just about, two elections back. My major opponents in that particular election are now supporting work that we're doing. So I appreciate that. Yeah. Let's see. We have members. I'd like to do a couple of things with the time remaining. First of all, I'd like to get a document back before, so it's not a bunch of pieces here and there, from previous work. And so I put that all together in a delete everything amendments, a 0565 amendment. And I believe it's inclusive of everything that that we have worked on in previous committees and have had. And so I'd like to put that into the bill so that this delete everything amendment is something we can work off of at this point, and then we can see where we go from there. With that, I'd like to move, I'll move the House File 8620, and I'll also then move Amendment 0565 to that bill. Any questions? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion prevails. Bill is amended. There is we have several amendments that we have before us. We can work on those and or just to, we can wait for those amendments specifically and talk about, go back to our different funding proposals that are before us. I believe you have a document in front of you that is the Clean Water Legacy Act. Has several different proposals in front of you. I asked for us to have a flip chart here today. I was wondering if maybe we could have just a discussion on those proposals and kind of see what seems to be getting some support and what's really not worth for us to spend time on, to see what we may be coming together on, is rather than actually working on discussing the amendments specifically at this point, just kind of work on seeing where we need to go with regard to the funding source. Is anyone object to that approach? Okay. Members, if we take the document that we have here and have the different columns, maybe the five columns across there, so that for beginning purposes, if we can just start to just identify those as column 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And I think that that way we can start to see as to where we may be at in this overall process. And I believe we have another one that was at least one more that was on the table, and that's Mr. Leslie Davis had a proposal of putting a fee on all water usage in the state of Minnesota. We'll call that number 6. I think that if you think, then we do have some others with regard to the maybe partial funding mechanisms also. We have, and we'll sell those out as we get down to it. Representative Wiggins had one with regard to bonding. Representative Lanning had one with regard to watersheds. But I think the items that we have that are the more significant funding sources would be, Representative 1 through 6, and we'll get to the other, how to actually utilize those monies when we get to bonding and watershed areas. I'm wondering as to the first one is the G16 proposed sewage fee, which has part of it's collected by municipalities, part of it's collected by the counties. It has a kind of mixed mechanism of exchanging revenues. Could you indicate to me, members, how many of you support or think we should continue talking about that particular proposal? How many want to continue discussing or have that proposal brought forward in future discussions? Okay. And then underline that also. Now we have the second one is the improved parcel. That's the... Excuse me. This one has... this one is the mechanism of the G16 proposal, a combination G16 proposal and a mechanism with the deed and mortgage tax. And that has, is there people who like to see that combination go together? I think we should talk more about that combination.
We can vote for once, right?
We can vote for more than one. And these are just kind of things we'd like to see. If there's, if we're starting to coalesce around any particular ideas.
Part of it I like.
Okay. The third one is improved parcel based on market value of the structure. Paul asked the proposal that I put on the table a couple of weeks ago. That's where you have a parcel that has evaluations are determined according to the structure that's on there. So it's asphalt, concrete, or shingles of some sort that's displacing water. And, we gave you a spreadsheet as to how that kind of broke out across the state. How many would like to continue to talk about that or have any discussion about the improved parcel base on the market value structure? How many are interested in doing that? Okay. There's improved parcel base on market value of structure with deed and mortgage tax combination. We want to do it. Do those. One, two. Parcel. Okay. Parcel. Number 5, the AMC, Association of Minnesota Counties, their funding proposal on septic system
component, five-year period phase-in. And then we had Mr. Davis's groundwater appropriation fee. It is a was a fee on consumption of water from mainly by industry. Anyone want to pursue that? Then we have on its own single issue. We'll call it number seven. That is the deed, the levy. I have it down here as the Hanson Watershed Levy Deed Mortgage Lottery. We have quite a concept, all different things you've thrown together there. How many would like to proceed on that one as it just kind of on its own?
Great. I'll jump in on that too.
Okay. And then Representative Lanning had a watershed levy. He was encouraging us to have districts form watersheds and be able to give them some authorities for levy on handling their problems.
Let me clarify that. I didn't see that as a way to fund this whole program. I saw it more as a way for local units to have matching funds available, but I need to know what what really that is about. If it's the latter, I feel comfortable with it. If it's the former, I'm not.
Mr. Chair, the other thing regarding that one is when we looked at the map of Minnesota, there was so much blank area that wasn't an organized watershed, and so I would think we'd have to address that too.
Right.
But it's worth discussion, certainly.
As a funding source, are there people interested in that program? Okay, how about as part of the picture for implementation? We'll just put that up for implementation. Representative Wagenius, bond proceeds. Of course, that's not a funding source. That's on the implementation side also, or how would you like us to describe that?
Well, I would actually like you to describe it as half the funding, because we would use GO bonds, and then any of these other sources would only be have to be half, because we've already done the wastewater, stormwater infrastructure with the GO bonds, which are cheaper than revenue bonds, which I object to going the expensive route. So any of these would be essentially cut in half by going this route.
Okay. To the Virginia's bond enhancement program, for how many years for keeping that on the table? Okay. Is there anything else that we have discussed that needs to be considered, continued, or decided as to whether that should be talked about in the future with regard to funding sort of first and
foremost? Well, one of the things is if we parcel this out, I think Representative Hansen suggested that we parcel this out into the three big segments. The infrastructure segment, and bonding is a possibility. The fixing segment, which a lot of these are. And then there's the assessment segment, or the segment that actually pays for the staff at MPCA, which is essentially doing staffing for MPCA. And one of the things we could do there, and I have the sheets we could hand out, right now, unlike air quality, where all the fees are paid for air quality permits, we subsidize the water permits. If we were to have those folks pay for their water permit fees, we would free up enough money
to pay for the assessment portion or the funding of MPCA. So here's just the...
Okay, is this you're talking about something different than this type of an allocation?
Right.
Okay. And this is on how the dollars would be actually spent?
Well, no, this is how the dollars could be raised for the portion of the bill that funds state agency work. And there is a portion of the bill that has, you know, we're going to get 39 new state employees out of this bill. And one of the things that goes on now in state government is that we are subsidizing water permit fees. And if we said, no, those folks have got to pay the administrative costs of their own fees, it would free up enough money to do the assessment portion, the monitoring and assessment portion. That's something new that I brought, and I think people are going to have to think about that for a while, but it would just be a portion of this bill if we have to do it in portions, which I think we may come to in the end. So I'd like people to think about it and talk about it before we would vote on it, because that may be down the pike a way.
For our next meeting, can we have some with regard to the two programs? I think there's interest in both Representative Lanning's and Representative Wagenius's ideas to continue the discussion and go forward. And if we would... number four, I believe, was the improved parcel based on market value on structure and deed mortgage tax.
Mr. Chair, when it comes to deed and mortgage tax, I don't know who's going to be working on expanding and enhancing these ideas. I would like to see comparisons of flat fee versus a progressive based on value per thousand or whatever, and the different, somehow we got to get some runs to show what we can raise both ways. And I mean, the progressive route, it may be very little per thousand where, you know, homeowners, others, you know, I don't know what it is, but I think we need to at least see from staff what some simple scenarios and runs on that.
Okay. Let's, if you would, if we can decide as to kind of which direction we're going in and then which information we need, like that, is this okay to for us to start to focus in these two areas? Does anyone object to us doing that? That way we start to narrow down our interview. We're coming up here pretty quick on timelines, so if that's okay, then... Representative Junkie, you said you wanted more details on
a fee per thousand versus a flat fee on mortgage registrations, mortgage and deed tax registration. Won't call it tax, fees. These are all fees, members. Remember that.
We all understand that. I know how to spell it.
Okay.
I don't care what you call it. There's no game.
Perhaps we could ask MPCA for funding their part of this bill and their staffing, that if we were to look at the general fund and environmental and remediation fund expenditures just for permitting, and if we were to raise those permits to free up the money, how that would work, so that they to fund PCA, essentially.
To fund their activities in the bill.
Fund their activities in the bill, which I think is something like $7 million in the second year.
And that's from their existing fees?
No, because they're not charging fees now, and they're doing some subsidies of water permitting fees, fairly hefty subsidies. We don't do that in air quality. Air quality folks, if you come and ask for permits, you got to write the check. But in water quality, there is subsidy from federal funds, general funds, environmental and remediation funds. So if we no longer offered those subsidies and people had to just pay for their fees, they wouldn't even have to pay the whole thing. We just reduce that subsidy. It would free up enough money to have MPCA
That's what it looks like on the chart, so we'd have to ask them about that.
Do you understand the question? Okay. You don't have to comment to it now. I just want to know if you... She's lost me, so I... I just want you to understand. It's not what else do we need with regard to additional information for this discussion process?
Following Representative Guinness, I do want to make sure general fund stays in the picture because we're looking at long-term funding apparatus. I think that should be a factor in it.
Okay.
So we might not always...
That's not something we really need to...
No, we know what the general...
No additional information you need for that, right?
Okay.
Any additional information we need for our discussion purposes in the next meeting so as we get trying to put some power on this?
Did we do this one?
Anything else? Okay. I think that we will, that gives us a little sense of direction as to where we'll go. I really appreciate Representative Genius handing this out, and you probably need to give me some private tutoring with it, all this works. And then, Is there any other issues or concerns that need to come before us right now?
The meeting tomorrow, Mr. Chairman? The meeting from when to next meeting?
Thursday or?
I'd rather, what are we doing? I'd like to, can we meet again tomorrow morning? We're scheduled to, and if that's all right, I just continue moving on this so we can get as much done as quickly as we can. As you know, the challenge is to try and get something done this year. There's a lot of people putting hurdles in front of us. But I think if we can really continue to polish on it and get a good quality work, our chances of becoming successful this year are really enhanced. So I think it's worth our time, energy, and effort to put it forward. We will have another meeting tomorrow morning and pick up where we've left off. We are adjourned.